Hello, and welcome to A Sense of Centerville and Washington Township, your place for stories about ordinary and extraordinary residents and places in the Centerville and Washington Township area. I'm Susan from Centerville, Washington History, and I look forward to hearing your story. Today, my guest is Steve Huff. Steve is in his 34th year of teaching in the Centerville City Schools. For the last 11 years, he has been a fourth grade teacher at Stingley, but before that, he served as the director of Grant Nature Center. Besides being a parent to four children, Steve and his wife, Nancy, have been foster parents to 45 others over the past 10 years. Spending time outside has always been important to Steve and his family, and they have wonderful memories of hiking, camping, fishing, and exploring together. In 2022, he received the Outstanding Teacher Award from Five Rivers Metro Parks for his effort to connect students to nature. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Susan. It is great to be here. I'm excited to be a guest today.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. I want to give a little background of why I picked you. I was actually reading in the book Normandy Farms and found your name. And then I remembered about Grant Nature Center. And we have these wonderful artifacts behind us. Grant Nature Center from Centerville City Schools. And then this one of Sun Terrific. And you were telling me a little bit about that, but we'll get to that hopefully. So go ahead and tell us a little background about how you got involved in the outdoors.
Sure. Be glad to. Growing up around this area, I'm from Beaver Creek. My parents still live there today. I graduated from Beaver Creek Schools. We have our fair share of outdoor opportunities, but nothing like the folks out west or in the east with mountains and rivers. So we did the best we could. My family was a big believer that being outside is a big part of growing up. And so for our family vacations and our weekend opportunities, we did a lot of family camping. My parents took us on weekend trips to local places like Cowan Lake or John Bryan. We also did bigger trips out to Wyoming, to Maine, exploring a lot of our national parks. So I credit a lot of my love for the outdoors to those experiences with my family. My grandfather was also big into hunting and outdoor reenactments for Civil War and things like that. I remember spending time with him, and he would show me his hunting dogs, and it's like everything we did when we visited was outside. And so everything I did growing up seemed to be outside. I had an opportunity to join Cub Scouts and then went through the Boy Scout program, eventually earning my rank of Eagle. And boy, talk about great adventure. I mean, monthly campouts, no matter what the season, no matter what the weather. And that's where I really started to learn about high adventure. And I quickly realized that makes me excited. Doing things outside, but not just maybe going for a walk or a hike, something a little more extreme, whether it's whitewater rafting or canoeing or rock climbing or backpacking. And so that's been a much of my adult life, doing things like that. Certainly did it with my family growing up, but have also continued doing that with my children as they've grown up and are now adults.
I love that. You're speaking my language. I love all those things too. So let's talk a little bit about Grant Nature Center, how you became involved with that, you know, how you came to choose what you wanted to do in life, and then how you came to the Centerville area for.
Boy, that takes me back, Susan. I can remember vividly being in the car with my mom and dad. I was a junior in high school, and they asked me that question. So what do you want to do? What do you want to be when you grow up? And I'd been thinking about it. It was a conversation that we'd had multiple times before. But at that very moment, there were two things that I was most excited and passionate about. One was being a park ranger with the National Park Service, and the other was being a teacher. I grew up in a family of educators. My mom was a middle school secretary. My dad was an elementary school principal. So I kind of knew that. But the aspect of being a park ranger intrigued me. So they said, well, why don't you find some people and talk to and see what that life would be like? And so we sought out a couple of people that were in the Park Service or studying to be park rangers. And that conversation helped me realize that being a teacher would kind of be a more stable path. Being a park ranger, at least at that time, meant you'd be moving around a lot. Your jobs were more year by year, dictated by the seasons. So I chose education and have loved every minute of it. And I was fortunate enough to be hired with Centerville City Schools. And my time as a fifth grade teacher for those first 10 years, I discovered that our own school district had this amazing program where students get to go and visit for a day at the Grant Nature Center located in Grant Park. And I thought, wow, that is amazing. I remember my own experiences in elementary. We got to go to a place called Glen Helen as a sixth grader and spent the night. Although the Grant Nature Center experience wasn't overnight, it did really meet a need that I believe is so important with elementary students. So for the first 10 years of my working in Centerville, I would take my fifth graders down to Grant Nature Center and participate in all the amazing activities. And I just loved it. And then I found out that the director at that time, Mr. Ed Kramer, was thinking about retiring. And I thought, ooh, this could be a great opportunity to kind of go back and combine my love of teaching with the love of outdoors, like that park ranger kind of thing. So the best of both worlds.
Fantastic. And actually, this was before you, but originally it was the Grant Science Life Centers. That's what it was called before you came on. There was overnight camping or overnight experiences, but it was a pretty volatile, challenge getting funding for it. So it wasn't a linear path. It was a lot of ups and downs. And by the time you got in there, there wasn't an overnight experience.
That's right. Although because I was kind of handed the baton from Ed, he was able to relay to me many of those early stories because he had been the director since 1972. The center opened in 1965, I believe, and it had a couple of directors those early years. And you're right, it was kind of an amazing, unique opportunity for this area in Ohio. There weren't many places like this. And at that time, you know, people really thought, you know, getting back to nature and education was so important that it was a unique opportunity. But the overnight experience was fraught with challenges. Mm-hmm. You put a bunch of middle school kids in a cabin overnight. Things can happen. And he told stories about, you know, it's difficult to get overnight chaperones. You know, kids might want to sneak out and explore the woods on their own. And then, of course, funding is always the biggest issue. So by the time I took over in 2000, the nighttime program had gone away and it was a day only program.
Right. And liability, I'm sure, as society changes, you have to protect more. And that's a good thing. Okay. So we want to talk a little bit about some of the people you worked with that maybe had focus on getting this education center up and running. So Ed Kramer and Mary Rose Back, that right?
That's right. Okay. That's right. Mm-hmm. But even before them, it really started with Hadley Watts.
I
never had a chance to meet him, but in fact, I was just talking with someone who knew him. Mm-hmm. And his vision, he must have been a historian as well, because his vision was to save the old hog and sheep barns from Mr. Grant's farm, which then were moved to Normandy School when it was being built prior to 1965. And those buildings served as the home base, if you will, the nature center down the hill from the school for all of those years. And when I remember telling people, you know, they would ask, what are these buildings? They're old pig barns and sheep barns.
Yeah, they are.
And so his vision to save those barns and to have a place where kids could come and really learn about the scientific method and connect with nature. He just thought that'd be a really great thing for Centerville City Schools. And so that was the mission all of those years. And Ed Kramer came with a little bit of background in that, but he really developed that program and tailored it to meet the needs of our students. But he certainly didn't do it alone. Mary Rose Back, amazing. Anybody who ever met Mary Rose, she just was a safe place, a warm hug. And she is really, I believe, the person that kept things going on day to day. You know, she was called a paranaturalist, like naturalist helper. But man, she taught kids, she loved nature, and she brought nature alive for everyone who visited. And she also did all of the behind the scenes things, the scheduling of students to come, organized the buses, collected the fees. She was really that person who was there. And I really give Mary Rose a lot of credit for being the person who mentored me my first couple of years, because when I came on, Ed left. He said, here are the keys. Show yourself around.
Figure it out.
Figure it out. And thank goodness I had Mary Rose to really show me what had been done mm-hmm. those first couple of years, so that I could then put my own stamp on it. She retired a couple of years later, but still would come back and visit and kind of check on things, I think. Mm-hmm. Of course, she lived right up the top of the hill, almost the first house right past Normandy School. So mm-hmm. The woods were her backyard. Grant Nature was her love. She really did. It was passionate and full of love for it.
What a great commute, too, to be able to look at the parks. You know, both of those people are written in this book, the Normandy Farm book. And what it talks about with Mary Rose is her enthusiasm. And as a teacher, enthusiasm for what you're teaching is such a vital thing, because you can only share what you're excited about, and then people kind of get that same excitement. Let's talk about why you think places like Grant Nature Center, which is now just Grant Park, because the Nature Center part of it has gone the way of many historical things. It's in the past. But we can still create our own nature center as we go and participate in the park. So why do you think they're so important?
Yeah. And, you know, nature is contagious. If you find people who are passionate and have a love for it, then they share that with other people. You know, we mentioned Ed and Mary Rose, but there were others. Lots of parent volunteers would come down. And I always tried to share the same message that nature is something to be cherished and something to be very thankful for and something to enjoy. And I discovered over the years there are many lessons that we can learn from nature if we slow down enough just to listen. And to look, nature can teach us many things. And in our fast-paced world today, it's often hard to slow down. It seems like we're always on the run trying to get to the next place. But there are so many wonderful things to experience in nature if we take the time just to slow down and to be quiet, to look and to listen. Couple of things that I remember really helping drive that home with students were activities that we did when they would visit. One we called visiting the underworld. And they would say, well, what's the underworld? I would stop on the trail in the woods and I would reach into my bag. I always had a special nature bag, and I would pull out a handful of dental mirrors. You know, the kind the hygienist looks mm-hmm. in your mouth with to see your teeth. And I would pass those out and I would say, these are your looking glasses into the underworld. What do we do with them? I said, get down on your knees, go low and slow, and use those mirrors to look under things that you might normally walk right past. And all of a sudden they would spread out. They would be looking under the bottoms of mushrooms or in between the bark pieces on trees. Or maybe they would be looking around the corner or inside of a hole that they were sure that a snake had made. But of course, I had to tell them or ask them the question, well, how would a snake dig a hole? A snake doesn't have any claws. Is he gonna bite the dirt and spit it out? And they'd be, no. So we realized that a lot of holes that we think are snake holes were probably made by something else. Mm-hmm. So the underworld was great. Another one that really caused us to slow down was one I called, let's go on a color walk. A color walk. What's a color walk? Well, I went to Sherwin-Williams, the paint store, where they have all the paint samples, right? The paint chips. And I'd cut them all apart, right? So there's these little squares of all of these colors. Because you can paint a wall just about anything, right? Any shade of green, any shade of blue. But we don't think of those colors necessarily as being found in nature. We think of greens and browns, maybe a light green or a dark green. And I would pass out those color chips and I would say, no, go and try to find your color in nature. And they would hold them up to the trees or the rocks or the roots. And would you believe they would find every color somewhere in the woods that I'd passed out? But it takes a person willing to slow down, to get off their normal hurried pace and to look and to listen. So those were a couple of great things that really stuck out to me as being, wow, this does work. And it does matter, because if we are teachers in the classroom, we want our students to slow down and be careful about what they read and to be careful when they work a math problem, right? But the natural tendency is to get through it as quick as we can just to say, I'm finished. We often reward the first finished. Mm-hmm. And so I would teach the students at the Nature Center, let's go on a slow walk, see who can be the last to finish. So even today, I still, whenever I walk in the woods, I remember those lessons that I learned in my early years, and I try to share those with those that are with me. Slow down. Go low and slow. Let's look and listen and see what we can learn together.
I absolutely love that. I know being outside is definitely a therapy for me. So thanks for sharing that. I'm just going to take a little pause and head back to this sign here, because you told me what suntific means, because to me, that's not really a word. So how did that come about?
So my understanding is when the buildings were moved from Mr. Grant's farm to the Grant Life Science Center, you know, they were used, and over time they needed some refreshing, needed some updating. And so Ed Kramer and Mary Rose Back, they spearheaded a fundraiser to raise some funds from the community and donations. Local garden clubs and such donated money. And so the buildings were resided, they were repainted, some landscaping was done outside. And then they got the idea to name the buildings. Let's give each building, and there were four of them, its own special name so we could refer to them. I'll meet you in the Evergreen, or hey, let's gather outside of the Pine Building. And one of the buildings was particularly used just in the wintertime, and it housed a lot of experiments and equipment that the students could use and the teachers could use to teach light and even sound, which is one of the standards even today for our fifth graders. And that building had a laser inside, and it had a number of things you could use to simulate light waves and sound waves. And the building ended up with the name Suntific. My understanding is there was a contest or some kind of a community, what could we name these buildings? And teachers and students put in, you know, their ideas. And then Ed and Mary Rose and perhaps a committee of students picked the names and then assigned them to the buildings. So sun coming from, you know, the sun that powers our earth, and tific from the word scientific, mm-hmm. because everything that was happening in there was around light and it was scientific.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It must have been a lot of fun. I know my older kids had opportunities to go and experience. We can talk about Journey to the Heart of Nature now, or we can go back to talk about your experience educating students and how you've continued that mission in the classroom.
Yeah, one more quick story, and I didn't expect this one. And, you know, sometimes you just learn by seeing patterns and things happen. One of my first big aha moments when I was the director at the Nature Center was after the first couple of years, I noticed there was a common occurrence when teachers who were visiting would bring their classroom from the bus, Normandy parking lot, down the hill where they were greeted by the sign, "Welcome to the Grant Nature Center." And we'd asked them before they came to divide their class into two groups because the activities we did would be divided up into groups. And I said, so think about it. Put your students in groups however you want, but think about their personalities and how they'll work together and that kind of thing, because they're going to be working together for several hours on various projects. And the teachers would come down the hill and we'd say hi. And I'd say, hello, class. Welcome to the Grant Nature Center. And they would would hand me their class list. And I would, you know, kind of fold it and put it in my pocket because we'd have to, you know, divide them into groups in a little bit. And often the teacher would say, no, wait, before you put that away, take a look, you'll see their names. And I put some stars there. And I'd say, well, what are those stars or what are those asterisks? And they would say, well, those are the kids that'll probably cause trouble for you today because they cause me trouble in the classroom. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'll watch out for them. But you know, an amazing thing happened is that oftentimes those were the students who caused no trouble. In fact, if you were to ask them, they'd probably say, this is the best day ever, because they really got to be outside in their element. You know, I didn't know it till later, but in a college class I was taking, I realized, or I learned, or was reminded that there are lots of ways to be smart. Right? You can be smart with art and music and the creative side, or you can be smart with math and numbers and analytics. But then there's also a new kind of smart. It's been around a while, but a lot of people don't talk about it. And that is being nature smart, having that naturalist intelligence. And boy, I saw that play out over and over and over. The one students that struggled in the classroom to sit still or to work on a worksheet or to read with a partner, they were in their element when they came to visit the Grant Nature Center. And we really tried to capitalize on that. And that was one of my first teachings then I did whenever I got new parent volunteers or wherever I had new people come and work at the Nature Center. We talked about that natural intelligence. And, you know, Ed and Mary Rose, I didn't learn that from them. I actually learned it from the students. Pretty amazing. We can learn from those that are younger from us. They're just living their lives and we see what brings them alive and we try to do more of that. And over the years, I got to share the role of director with a number of different people. Kathy Pace came to work at the Nature Center. Kathy left the primary village to came and to come and work with students. And she was an amazing naturalist. Laura Fayette came and worked for a time. Jackie G. Lombardo, who is now an art teacher at one of the primary villages, she helped me for a summer and filled in a little bit. And then Laura Peterson, who was the long-term naturalist at one of the primary villages as well. We all played a part in that story in discovering what makes kids come alive.
And I think it's so important to have that component, a way for children who don't excel in the classroom setting to be able to, you know, have a way that makes them happy and learn in a very hands-on way. At Centerville Washington History, we try to make hands-on learning, and they love that too. But it's a way for them to engage in their environment. So that's very important in learning.
Absolutely. So,
we talked a little bit about Journey to the Heart of Nature. Let's talk about how that came about and what it was. And then I'll share a little bit about how that came to me as well.
It was probably my second or third year as the director of the Nature Center, just still really figuring things out, that my supervisor, Terry Riley, who at that time was also the assistant superintendent in charge of curriculum, and he and I had a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, he said, I want to challenge you with something. He said, we have many programs in Centerville City Schools that are specifically designed for our gifted students. But it seems that it's for the gifted students who are tagged gifted in math or reading or music. Right. But he said, I would love for you to create a program that would be specifically for our students who are gifted in science. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. What kinds of things would you want me to do? And he said, you can do whatever you'd like. He said, we will screen the kids based on their test scores and we'll give you a list and you can do an invitation and figure out how many kids you can take and what you're going to do and what the format will look like. And I said, wow. What an awesome opportunity. So I thought about it for a while and then created a summer program after the school year was out called Journey to the Heart of Nature. And the first year, it was just really a trial. I had a person work with me, Jackie G. Lombardo, who I knew from one of the elementary schools where I worked. And she was the creative side because we wanted to do like art journaling and nature art and things like that. And that was right up her alley and not up my alley. I knew the trails of the park and I knew some of the other things I wanted to do, like teach them to, you know, really respect nature and you know, become one with nature throughout the week. So we were a pretty good team and it was good. And the class filled up right away. So the next year we thought, wow, what if we did 2 weeks of this? And at that point, Jackie said, I've got other things to do. You're going to have to find someone else. And so I tapped on the shoulder my good friend Robert Irwin, who was at that time the environmental science teacher at Centerville High School, still is. It's one of our career education programs. And I said, what do you think? Is this something you'd like to spend part of your summer doing? And he said, yeah, you bet. So we put our heads together and brainstormed and really came up with a dynamic and fun program for the kids, loosely based on the show Survivor, which was really popular back at that time. We would take 18 students each week and we would divide them up into three tribes by picking colored stones, and they'd have to create a flag and a tribe name. And then throughout the week, we just put them through all sorts of challenges, like how to tie knots and build a structure that could support your whole team's weight for 5 minutes. We taught them how to make fire with flint and steel and how to boil water. And we had a timed competition. We borrowed some archery equipment from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and we set up targets and we shot archery right there behind the Nature Center. We introduced geocaching to them, and they had to use electronic GPS to go find clues throughout the park, which had pieces of different challenges. Just an amazing, amazing opportunity. And we would end the week with an overnight campout. And they would come and set up tents. Their parents would say goodbye. We had s'mores over the fire, told stories, went on a night hike, called in the owls and listened to the night sounds. And then the next morning we'd have a big breakfast and then say, see you later. And do it again the next week with 18 new students. And once we really got rolling and realized there was such a need and a desire for this, we ended up doing 3 weeks every summer. I swear we could have done 5 or 6, but we needed a break too to spend with our family.
Yeah, for sure.
But even although it was really fun, one of the most special parts, I think, was a part of the week and a part of each day called Visit Your Special Spot. And on the first day, after lunch, we would take all 18 students in a line out into the woods along the trails of Grant Park, and we would stop. And the first student, we'd say, okay, here is your entrance to your special spot. Now go and find it. And they would look at us like, what? We want you to go off by yourself, off the trail, as far as you're comfortable. Find a rock, find a log, find a comfortable place and sit down. And just look around. And we would do that to the next student and the next student. And they felt all alone. Now, truly, they probably weren't more than 25 or 30 yards away from the previous student, but we would alternate sides of the trail so they felt alone. And we promised we'd come back and get them. And so by the time we dropped off the last student, Robert Irwin and I, we would run around and start to pick up the first one. It'd been about a half an hour that first day. And some of them came out with big smiles. Some of them were a little bit nervous. They'd never been left alone outside in the woods for a half an hour. And we would do that each day. And each day there was a different focus. One day it was draw a map of your area. One time it was to go and feel the textures in the area, the rocks and the trees, pick up some soil. Another day it was about smelling. Another day it was just about connecting with your spot and ask your spot some questions. Talk to your spot. And they kept a journal. In fact, I brought with me one of my old journals all the way back. I looked at the date from 2006, Journey to the Heart of Nature right here. They all had a journal, a special journal, waterproof paper. And they carried their own nature bag that we loaned them with binoculars and some toilet paper, just in case, some snacks. And they would go to their special spot. And by the end of the week on that Friday, our last full day, they were in their spot for almost 2 hours.
Wow.
And some did not want to leave. And all of them at the end, that was one of their favorite memories, their special spot.
Yeah. So you mentioned that, you know, as a parent, your kids going through this, all you know is you're picking them up and they're happy and they love it. But I was sharing with you as we talked on the phone how my daughter, two of my kids participated in this. And my daughter, when she got married, she wanted to show her future husband where her place was. She remembered it so many years later, and it was still a place of significance to her because, you know, it probably was the first time that she experienced nature like that. And we were a camping family, but it's just different, you know, picking the spot and having that quiet time. So thank you for, you know, explaining what happened during those times where you drop your kids off and not necessarily sure what's going on, but
which in itself is an amazing thing that parents would put that much trust in us to spend an entire week, I mean, all day and then overnight at the end, you know, with their kids, giving them these opportunities. And the sixth and seventh graders that came to Journey Camp, I mean, they were just primed. That time in their life when they're learning so much about themselves and they were willing to take a risk. And it was just amazing. It was truly, as I think back to my 13 years there, a capstone experience for me. Just, I was very, very lucky to have the position as part of Centerville City Schools, to be the director, really a teacher at the Nature Center, but to be able to develop this program, Journey to the Heart of Nature, still to this day, just makes me feel proud and excited for what the students were able to accomplish.
Yeah, and they're probably, you know, well, they're definitely better for having had that experience. We're going to shift gears a little bit, and we can always come back to anything that we don't get to, but I want to talk a little bit about foster care and how you became involved in that and, you know, what that's looked like for you and your family.
Sure. It really came about while we were on a camping trip. Believe it or not, my family, we like I said, we love to camp, and we were at a camping weekend, and my wife Nancy got a phone call from someone we knew that heard about a child that needed a home. And this particular child had Down syndrome, which was always a passion of ours, and we immediately said, well, we'll take her. We'll do it. And we didn't know there are rules to these kinds of things. You can't just raise your hand and say, we'll take a child. And so that quickly was explained to us. So we decided so that we're ready the next time this opportunity presents itself, let's go through the process and become a licensed foster home. We decided to get licensed through Montgomery County. There are also private agencies, which are amazing, and they have their own training programs and rules. But we chose the county, and you had to go to class about 40 hours at that time and learn all about what it means to be a foster family, your roles and responsibilities. And you learned about not all children will be easy to care for while they're in your home. Many times the children have trauma or other things that have happened in their lives that are causing significant behaviors. There might be medical needs along the way. But of course, as a parent, a foster parent, you can kind of pick and choose your age range that you're comfortable with, what kinds of needs you might be okay with, what kinds of things you're not interested in. It might be too much. My family, we chose to try to preserve our birth order. In other words, not to have a child that's older than our youngest child. And our youngest child at that time was probably 8. And so that kind of kept us in the, you know, early age. And my wife, Nancy, absolutely loves babies. She would describe herself as having a baby addiction. We had 4 of our own, and she would have loved probably to have many, many more. But at some point, you have to say enough's enough. And so this really met a need over the last 10 years to have all of these children, you know, come into our homes. And so we had pretty great luck in keeping that birth order. There were a couple times we broke that rule for very significant reasons, very specific emergency needs. But we did have a teenager who was in our home for a while. She was actually the same age as our oldest. And we, she was in our home, and she finished high school and graduated from Centerville at the same time as our oldest daughter.
Wow.
So that was pretty amazing. And, you know, this young lady was the first one in her family in many generations to graduate from high school. And so we celebrated in a big way. we were her family at that ceremony. Pretty amazing to be a part of that. Foster care, I believe, has been really great for our family. My children, you know, they went through a lot sharing their toys, sharing their rooms, sharing the time with the children that came into our home. But I believe if you were to ask my four children who are now adults, was it worth it? They would all say absolutely, because we realized now not every child growing up around us has the same opportunities that we've had to have a family to take us camping, to do things with us, to provide for our needs. And we also tried not just to care for the child that was placed in our home, but we really wanted to build a relationship with that child's parent or parents, because many times we only know what we know. And so sometimes the parents that had a child removed, they were doing the best they could, but they had a trauma in their life, or they had something in their life that caused them to, for at least a moment, not be a good parent. And we really believe they deserve another chance. And so our job was to care for their child while they're getting well, while they're getting educated, while they're getting stable or back on their feet. We want to give that child back. And so we made that very clear from the very get-go, that we're going to love your child the best that we can and keep them safe until you're ready to get them back. And we're still invited to birthday parties and special events of our previous foster children's parents. In fact, we just attended the birth of one of the moms who had another baby. We had one of her other children, but she got them back and she just had another baby. And she called my wife as one of the first people to come and visit her in the hospital. We just got to celebrate with one of the moms that previously had her children taken away, but she just got an amazing job to be a peer mentor, helping other people who have gone through or are going through challenges in their life with substance abuse and addiction. And she said, I am ready. This is my dream job to now help other people and teach them what I learned.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. I think, you know, I grew up with foster siblings as well. And, you know, I really admire, you know, that you recognize and have that compassionate approach to, you know, people who are in difficult situations that don't know how to raise because they weren't raised with compassion and understanding. So
nature was a big part of it, though, too, because as children came into our home, we kept doing what our family did. And our family went outside. We played outside. We ate outside. We went camping outside. I'll never forget two elementary sisters that came into our home right before spring break one year. And it was kind of an unexpected thing. They needed a home. And we said, sure. And we had already planned a family backpacking trip to the Smoky Mountains. And we said, guess what, girls? You're going with us. Well, they had never been on a hike. They certainly had never camped out overnight. So we had some friends quickly gather and get us some backpacks in their size and sleeping bags. And we threw in some extra food. And we took off to the Smoky Mountains and slept for two nights up on the Appalachian Trail in the shelters. And, you know, they go back to their own lives and they kind of complained along the way. But I know seeds were planted and maybe those will blossom and grow in the future.
Yeah. And outdoors can definitely be therapy to help, you know, those struggles that people have in their life. Would you tell your apiary story? Do you mind going back to that? Because there was a little apiary at Grant Nature, and I'd love to tell about how you became involved in caring for bees.
Absolutely. I grew so much as a person and as a naturalist over the years there. I would always on the trail help to break down the fears that people have. And oftentimes when kids would come to the nature center, they were scared or frightened of various things that they find in nature, like, you know, snakes, bats, bees, spiders, right? All of those big things. And so I would create some sayings along the way, you know, like, you know, nature is our friend, you know, bats and bees and are not bad. They're actually created for a purpose. And sometimes we just need to discover what that purpose is. So let's not try to smash them and kill them and get rid of them. Snakes are okay too. And so I tried to share that. So I really wanted to live it out. So when I got down to the Nature Center, right when you walked in the door of the main building, just inside the door, there was this another door to like a cabinet you would open. Imagine that. And behind the cabinet door, there was glass. And at one time, there was an active beehive, an observation beehive there that Ed Kramer had put in over the years. But at the very time when I got down there, it was no longer operational. So you'd open it and it was full of cobwebs and the wax was all deteriorated. It looked really scary and nasty. So every time students would come in the building my first year, they would open that and say, "Ooh, what's this? That's a beehive." Close it up. "Whoa, what's this?" I mean, day after day. And I said, "All right, I need to either get this thing back and working and functioning, or I just need to get it out of here because it is a daily source of questions." So as a good naturalist, if I don't know something, I wanted to seek out and learn what I could. And so I asked around and found that in the Centerville, Washington Township area, we had a local beekeeper. In fact, there are several clubs of people that keep bees. But the one I found was a gentleman by the name of Mark Merrill, who to this day owns Merrill Plumbing, but he also loves bees. And he actually, in a workshop down toward Waynesville, had all the parts that I needed to get that beehive back up and running and functioning. He even served as my mentor in the beginning, showing me how to build the frames and how to order bees that were purchased by the pound. You buy bees by the pound. And so he ordered some bees for me and helped me install those bees in the hive and helped me those first few years. And we got it going. And the kids, a much better sight to open that door and see bees crawling around than just a bunch of cobwebs. But I didn't stop there. I wanted to really learn about the bees. So my wife and I decided, well, let's get a beehive at our house. And so we set one up and went through all the steps, and I read about it and studied it the best I could. And I put my bees in, usually around, you know, this time of year, March, April timeframe, beginning of spring. And so one day I put the bees in, and I'm supposed to wait 3 days, according to all of my research, before you open the lid to see how they're doing. Well, I was a little bit impatient, and it had only been 1 or maybe 2 days. We had been out for the evening and came back, and it was not quite dusk. My family's going back in the house, and I said, "Oh, I'll be in a minute. Let me just check on the bees." So I was just wearing regular clothes, not the bee suit, not the helmet, not the face protection. I just wanted to take a quick peek. And so as I approached the hive, I watched and I listened. Everything seemed fine. And I cracked that lid open to look inside. Well, you would have thought I set off an alarm because the bees poured out of the bottom onto me. They're swarming around my head. They're flying short sleeves on. They're swimming or flying up my sleeves. I got probably a couple of dozen stings before I could shut that and get away fast enough. And I thought to myself, that was not a good move. What a rookie mistake. And I, you know, wiped the sweat off my brow, went inside, told my wife what had happened. She said, "Well, just sit down. I'm finishing things up and let me know if you're feeling all right." About an hour went by and I was feeling okay. And then the itching started. I started just itching all over my body. And I looked and I had welts forming and hives. I felt my throat starting to swell up. And I said, you better call 911. So she called and the squad came and they took my blood pressure. My heart was racing. They took me to the hospital. And it turns out I was allergic to bees. They asked me in the ER, "What happened? How'd you get so many bee stings?" And I said, "Well, I'm a beekeeper and I just started this new hobby." And they looked at me and said, "Well, you might want to think about a different hobby because you're allergic. So you can either quit the bees or you can go see an allergist and go about, you know, getting yourself immune to the bee stings." And so that's what I decided to do. And so for about 3 years, I took regular bee venom injections so that I would be immune to the venom of bees and no longer have a problem. I carried an EpiPen for a lot of years, but boy, those bees taught me so many lessons about patience, about being aware. It wasn't until later did I realize the couple mistakes I made. Number one, I approached too late in the day. It was right about dusk when all the bees are home. You're supposed to only crack that lid and look inside in the middle of the day when it's sunny and they're all out and about foraging. And the other thing is, it was right before a rainstorm, so the barometric pressure had changed. And the bees sense that. Things in nature, they know what's going on. Oftentimes we miss it because we're on our devices or we're in climate-controlled areas. We don't pay attention to all of the signs and signals that are all around us. So I learned from the bees that year. I kept bees for many, many more years. I had as many as 6 hives at one time. I've taught other people to keep bees. Centerville Washington Park District also has an apiary. And we're trying to continue the message that bees are okay. Bees and bats are not bad. They're our friends.
For sure. I love it when I see some bats in my backyard because they're eating the bugs. It's fantastic. I really want to get to a few more questions before we run out of time. And I think an important one to you was, how has your love of nature impacted family?
And it's funny because it wasn't really until I started thinking about, being a guest here and thinking back to my role at the Nature Center, because things in life just happen kind of fast. You know, the Nature Center closed after a couple of school district levy failures. You know, it was in existence for almost, it was 49 years, 1 year short of 50.
Wow.
And so at that time, I still remember the day I was told that the doors are going to close. And that moved me back into the classroom. And I really feel that being a naturalist and being a teacher have helped me be a better parent. And being a parent has helped me be a better teacher. So I think about those things a lot. So as my kids have been growing up, we do a lot of things outside. But now that they're all adults, I can really kind of sit back and I can look at their lives and I see the seeds that were planted and how they've grown. Couple of examples. My oldest son, Gabe, and my youngest daughter, Emmalise, just last year at the end of March, went to Georgia. In fact, my wife and I dropped them off in Georgia at Amicaola Falls State Park, and they started an adventure to hike the Appalachian Trail, which had always been one of my dreams.
Mine too.
I thought to myself, man, when I retire, I want to do this. But it's 2,000 miles.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask.
From Georgia to Maine, and it takes about 6 months. So in order to do it, you need to figure out how to crack that nut. Well, they were at a time between classes and stages of their lives, so they decided to do it. So we're like, you bet, we'll drive you down there. Well, they started off together. My daughter, unfortunately, she got sick and had to come off. She tried again and wasn't able to finish. But my son, Gabe, he did the entire thing. We picked him up in Maine at Mount Katahdin this past October. And he completed just shy of 180 days, 2,200 miles. And I reflect a lot about that experience. And I've talked to him about it. And he said, well, you taught us to hike and camp. It only made sense. I said, well, weren't you worried? Weren't you scared? He said, no, it was just like we had done our whole lives. In fact, my son was able to help people along the trail overcome some of their fears. Because believe it or not, many people start that journey with no
experience.
Outdoor experience, no camping experience. Yeah. So that's one example. Another one that just blows me away how connected we are. When I was working at the Nature Center early on, I was trying to consume every piece of material I could, reading books about how to interpret, what tree this is and what flower this is and how to identify, this snake from that snake, because the kids always want to know, right? And so one of my early mentors was not somebody who actually worked at the Nature Center, but she actually worked for a couple of park districts. I met her when I was helping a friend in Mason. She was leading a night hike. And later I found out she was actually the part-time naturalist at the Centerville Washington Park District, Kendra Scheid. And Kendra and I became friends, ended up going sailing with her husband. And we did things together. She taught me so much about nature because that was her profession. And I learned from her, and I would take copious notes and ask her questions. And later on, she moved from the Centerville Washington Park District to the Bellbrook Sugar Creek office. That was where she lived in Sugar Creek, and she became the naturalist there. And I knew that, but it wasn't until my daughter graduated from college with a science degree And she was looking for her first job, and the position of the naturalist for the Bellbrook Sugar Creek Park District came open. And she applied and got that job. And she was handed the keys from the office to the nature office from my mentor, Kendra Scheid, to my daughter, Gracie Monroy. Incredible. And I got to go to Kendra's retirement ceremony and party and celebrate it and just talk about what an amazing adventure has been. But my daughter would say the same thing as my son. Well, Dad, you just took us outside all the time. And that's where she learned, I believe, her love of nature. And then just yesterday, my son, Gabe, is looking for a new job before he goes on to his next adventure. And he just found out that he was hired at the YMCA Camp Kern to be on their outdoor education staff. So starting next week, he'll be leading elementary students, middle school students on the trails of Camp Kern, talking about trees, talking about bugs and bees and snakes and spiders, and inspiring them, hopefully, to find their love of nature as well.
It's in his blood, and it's in your kids' blood. I'd love to go back to Stingley. We just have a few minutes, because that's where you're teaching nature. How does that incorporate into the classroom, and how, you know, the project, the meadow project came about?
Many of the schools have some kind of a nature space. I mean, Normandy is probably the luckiest because they back right up to Grant Park, which is almost 200 acres. Stingley, where I currently work, we're kind of landlocked. There's not much around there, and there were really no nature spaces. So we had talked about for years, you know, creating something to give the students an opportunity to go outside and explore. But it was about 3 years ago when Katie Thornton came to be our principal that the idea really got some momentum. And we applied for a grant. We had lots of excited folks on board. So we decided to take some of our grassy area, which was like a kickball field, football field, and create a meadow space. And our administration for the schools and the maintenance staff, they got behind it. We partnered with the Centerville Park District. We tilled it up. We found an expert in meadow plants and wildflowers, and he came and donated his time and donated his seed so that we could get this meadow kicked off. Of course, we had all the students out there scattering seed and stomping on it, and they fully believe to this day that they planted that entire meadow. They don't know that we actually hired a pro to come in and slice seed in those seeds as well, but it's great, that excitement. And it all started because we saw a story in the newspaper and online that the monarch butterflies were losing their habitat. And in their migration to go down south, they were having trouble finding resting places along the way. And we said to the students, what could we do? Is there any way we could help? And they thought, and they said, well, why don't we create a resting place here at Stingley? And so from there, it just took off. We all researched the meadow and how that could benefit not only the monarchs, but other butterflies as well and other creatures, creating a habitat, a safe space for those critters. And everybody at Stingley was on board. In that first year, we weren't sure what we would get. But believe it or not, we had grass that was well over the height of many of our students. This past fall, we got out there a lot. We've had, you know, kids reading out there, doing math out there. We have magnifiers, binoculars. It's still evolving. We'll be building a shed this spring to house some of our collection equipment and some magnifying glasses and nets and buckets and all of those things. But hopefully that meadow will be around for many years to come because it's a wonderful addition to Stingley Elementary. And it's really cool because if you know Stingley, it's right next to the cemetery. And right from the middle of the meadow, if you look across toward the cemetery through the chain link fence, there's one headstone that faces different than everyone else. And that's C.L. Stingley. He's facing the school in which he's named after. The school's named after him. And he's keeping an eye on Stingley Elementary, but now he's got a great meadow to watch as well.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. That's a great place for our podcast to end today. Thank you so much for being here, Steve. It's been very special, spiritual time talking about And also thanks to MVCC for helping to produce this podcast. If you have an interesting story about Centerville or Washington Township, please contact Centerville Washington History. Please also come visit our museums Tuesday through Friday, 12 o'clock to 4 p.m. and visit our Facebook page or Instagram page at CentervilleWashingtonHistory.org. Thank you and bye-bye.